Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to Gamer Tag Radio, episode 1002. This is your host, Danny, and also joining me for this episode, as always, Paris Lilly. What's going on, Paris?
Hey, good morning, Danny. Good morning to everyone with us live here on Twitch and listening on the audio recorded podcast. Thank you for joining us for this episode.
Yeah, man, we have lots of things to talk about. But first, head over to gamertagradio.com, post your comments and feedback, listen to our past episodes, and whenever you get the chance, go to any podcast platform out there. Any of them. Could be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and like Paris says, ColecoVision. Just search for Gamertag Radio, follow us, subscribe, post a review, and yeah, it will help us out to climb
I'm gonna
top of the charts.
I'm going to switch it up. Instead of saying ColecoVision, I'm going to start saying the 3DO.
The 3DO.
I just read an article. The reason I say that, I just read an article on it. It was about the demise of the 3DO, why it didn't work. It was kind of interesting, actually. I should send you a link to it.
Really? Yeah. I gotta check that out, man. Do you ever play Sega Channel back then?
No, I didn't. I was poor. Okay. We weren't rich to have Sega Channel.
No.
Actually, I was an adult then. I was still poor. Yeah, I didn't.
All right, cool. Yeah. Yeah, that's, look, man, before PlayStation Now, before Game Pass, there was Sega Channel. Remember that, man. Super classic.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
So this article was posted by Bloomberg a couple days ago. Not a gaming site, guys. Not a gaming site. That Sony is struggling with PlayStation 5 price due to costly parts. And I go on Twitter to see what people are saying. And the first thing I got to see is Paris. Just he posted like a nice little tweet. And everybody was...
It was a petty tweet. Let's be honest. I was being extremely petty.
Was?
Yeah. Extremely.
Well, why was that? Why?
Because like I've said forever on Twitter, all this console war nonsense is so dumb. So here's the thing. 3 weeks ago, people were up in arms that Microsoft was potential. Well, they are not going to have exclusive games for the first year of the Series X. Obviously, we talked to Phil Spencer about that. He gave his reasoning, which made perfect sense to me. Now, I'm not saying that PlayStation is doing this, but how ironic would it be if they wind up doing this? Because the reason being, like you're saying, it's coming out now with Bloomberg that just to make a PlayStation 5 is potentially going to cost $450 just due to part shortages, just things of that nature. So it's going to be pretty pricey. What this means is not that, well, just sell it for $450. There's also other costs involved. You got, you know, marketing, packing, shipping, all this. So it adds up that it is not going to be cheap to make a PlayStation 5, right? So you could say, oh, well, PlayStation should just, you take a loss on it and still sell it for $399. So let's just, again, pretend. Let's just say for them to get a PlayStation 5 out the door at cost is $500, right? Now you're telling them to take a $100 loss on every console that's sold. Let's just say they sold 2 million. It'll probably be more than that, but let's just say 2 million in the first year. That's a $200 million loss that Sony is taking for the PlayStation 5 in the first year. Not so sure they're willing to do that. Yeah, of course they can make some of that up in game sales, subscriptions, things like that. I get it. But that's a huge loss right off the top. And then you're counting on making that up in subscription services and game sales and other fees. I'm not so sure they can do that personally. So again, let's just pretend. Let's just say they take a $50 loss.
What if? What if?
$450.
Right? What if?
They sell the PlayStation 5 for $450. Maybe now they realize, you know what? We got 100 million PlayStation 4 owners out there in the world. realistically, like I said, only a few million of them are going to upgrade in the first year to play these next generation games that we're going to have at launch. Maybe we should have them all available on the PlayStation 4 as well. Sure, they're going to be a lower res, all that. Same, basically the same exact thing that Microsoft is doing. So again, I was being extremely petty when I put out my little T emoji that imagine if the PlayStation 5 games were on the PlayStation 4 the first year. And of course, you know, people that are super fans of the PlayStation got mad at me. Oh, Parrish, you're a hypocrite. You talk about game console gaming is dumb, but then you put out this, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I did, because I really don't care in the sense that the whole argument is dumb. The whole thing is dumb. Who cares is my point.
Agreed.
Who cares if, again, pretend Horizon Zero Dawn 2 is also on the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 5. It's the same exact scenario of Halo Infinite being on the Xbox One and on the Series X. It doesn't matter. If you want a PlayStation 5 at launch, go get one. Because guess what? I'm going to go get one. 100% I'm going to go get a PlayStation 5 at launch because I want the latest and greatest. But allow the other 100 million PlayStation 4 owners to have that choice. What baffles me about the whole thing is people get mad about having a choice. I just don't understand that. We were just saying this before about the Xbox. Now I'm saying about the PlayStation. What does it matter? And look, chances are they're not going to do this. Chances are, yeah, those PlayStation 5 games will be PlayStation 5 exclusive. Great. Still getting a PlayStation 5. But now you're limiting your market of who's going to play your first year games. That's all. We're in a different era of technology now. These consoles aren't the way they were a decade ago. I mean, everything's using the x86 architecture. For all intents and purposes, they're PCs. And PC gaming has done this for decades at this point. You have a high end, you have a medium, and you have a low tier. What's the difference? Mm-hmm. There is no difference. So again, I think all this bickering over what piece of plastic you're using to play your games and you have to defend the honor of a corporation that only cares about your money is ridiculous. And that goes for Microsoft, Nintendo, PlayStation, 3DO, Vectrex, Intellivision, Atari, all of them. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
Play the freaking games that you want to play on the system that you want to play it on. Stop worrying about what other people do. I will never understand that. Because guess what? I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't care what Danny does. I don't care what anyone listening to this does. I only care what I do because it's my money. Period. And I know that's ranty, but it's just the truth. And people that get so mad about this is hilarious to me. So there you go.
It's all good, Paris. We're saying the truth. I mean, look, man, isn't this consumer friendly? Like, I don't see how this is a bad thing. If that's the choice that PlayStation, like, if they go to that route, I think that's good. At least you have a choice, and at least you're not going to miss those exclusive games that's only going to be available on just the PlayStation family. I think that's good. Really, really good, man.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? So I hope that happens because I just want people to realize that the industry is changing and a lot of the companies are also changing when it comes to that because, like you said, dude, there's over 100 million PlayStation owners. Why PlayStation is going to leave that and just concentrate so much on just PlayStation 5 during the first year or two? That's a huge opportunity they're going to miss. Plus, all these third-party companies that are making these games, where are they going to go, Paris? Of course, they're going to start making games for both systems because that's more money for them. Games are not cheap, man, to develop, man. Not cheap at all nowadays, man. You know, so I think it's fine. Yeah. I don't see the big drama with that, man. But now, here's the question that I have is, let's just say that PlayStation is waiting for Xbox to announce their price. When is going to be the right time for PlayStation to announce the price of the PlayStation 5? Because here's the thing that I see, Paris, is that when we talked to Phil, he said that they're going to have a very different approach when it comes to marketing their new system, right? Now, the question is, when is the company is going to announce their price? Because the rumor is they're waiting for Xbox, but Xbox could randomly just announce their price March, April, May, whenever they feel like, because they're trying to do something different this time around. How they call it, bold moves, right? So is PlayStation's not going to E3. So when is the right time for them to announce this, man? Or should they announce it first because, you know, they're number one, people are still going to buy it, people are going to still support the system. So what do you think, Paris?
I still think they're going to wait till after whatever Microsoft says at E3, and then they're going to adjust from there. I mean, it could be as soon as a week after E3, or it could be a couple months later. Well, a couple months seems kind of extreme. I don't see this going past the first week of August as far as them announcing the price and having whatever the pre-order plan is going to be for the PlayStation 5. I think what all of this is, be it PlayStation, Microsoft, or whatever, we're entering a different era of gaming and how games are being sold to you and how you're going to interact with them, where you're going to play them, things like that. So, you know, these machines are going to be pricey. That's just a part of it. I get that PlayStation wants to keep that $399 synergy because clearly it's worked since 2013, but it's just looking like they're not going to be able to do that. So they're going to have a different way to market their games at a higher price, or their system, I should say, at a higher price to the consumers to have it make sense. And all I'm saying is we're the hardcore people, us on this podcast right now, the people that are listening to this or watching it on Twitch, we're the hardcore. We're the people that they could say it's $600 and the majority of us are probably still going to run out and go buy it day one. But most people can't afford to spend that amount of money, especially on a gaming system, especially when they already have a gaming system sitting under their television with, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of games available to them, depending on, you know, what they bought over the past 7 or 8 years. So when you look at it that way, who's really running out day one to buy a $500 plus console? You're going to probably wait until the price drops. Price ain't dropping for the first year. So it'll be interesting to see. Clearly, Microsoft has set up theirs to say, we're not asking you to buy the Series X at launch. We're going to make sure all our games are available to you on the current hardware, or you can go play it on your PC, or you can stream it via Project X Cloud. They've made that clear. What Sony does will be interesting. Do they stick with the traditional model? I mean, all signs say that, yes, they absolutely are going to stick with the traditional model. But are people going to be willing to spend $450, $500 on a PlayStation 5 at launch? Will they still have the high sales numbers that they had during the PlayStation 4 in year one? Or are people going to wait until we get a price drop? That's all it really comes down to. Or the side of that, do they make their launch games available to their PlayStation 4 owners in anticipation that they're not going to have a high adoption rate of the new console until there's a price drop? It will be interesting to see how it plays out, you know? So I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen once we get to E3 and beyond, and we start seeing how much these things are going to cost. What are the launch lineups going to look like? And then obviously we'll speculate from there on how well they'll do.
Now, my question to you, Paris, and I know this rumor has been going around now for maybe a year or so about the second console from Xbox. Do you think that's real? Do you think it's a rumor that's fake?
I think it's real. I just don't think it's year one. I just don't think it launches in November. I think that's something you'll see in 2021. Just my opinion.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I can see that. Because I think sometimes, you know, watching the docuseries from The Toys That Made Us, I learned a lot about how it is behind the scenes when it comes to the competition of the toys industry, right? And sometimes I feel like all these rumors was created from the inside, from let's say Microsoft, just to start a buzz to see what Sony is going to do next. Are they also going to create a second console because of that? Because the main PlayStation 5 is probably going to be too expensive and have another version that's cheaper. You know what I'm saying? Like a pro version and the regular version, something like that. So, I mean, that's possible too. They could be fake just to start a little buzz and to see what Sony's gonna do after hearing that rumor.
I mean, there's been too much smoke to think that it's not real. It's real. I just think Why? And again, you look at their strategy. All the games are on the Xbox One. So if I'm not buying a Series X, why am I buying, what is it, Lockhart? Why would I buy the Lockhart version if I already have a One X? I would personally, me, I'm just talking to me. I don't know what other people would do. I wouldn't get Lockhart if I couldn't afford a Series X. I would just keep my One X and just ride it out until the Series X is more affordable. So again, pricing, how this stuff rolls out, it's going to be fascinating to see. But if I had to guess, Lockhart winds up being probably like a mid-2021 thing. Maybe they even wait until E3 2021, if E3 exists, and announce it then. It's a lower cost option, obviously lower the price of Series X at the same time. And again, more options as they retire the Xbox One line. Because you got to think, at some point, the Xbox One consoles, they're just going to stop making them. So then maybe that's when you introduce Lockhart and say, hey, here's a lower price option that's going to have ray tracing. Maybe it does 1440p, things like that. And you just go from there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Now, imagine this. They're on stage, both companies, and they announce that the console is $499. People are gonna be like, "Oh, right!" The crowd, they're gonna react very differently when they hear the price. But imagine they also say, "But look, hey, we're not. You guys can still play the exclusive titles. You can still play Halo Infinite on your Xbox One, your Xbox One S, and X for this price." So if they're announced the price and they're lower the price for the consoles they are out now, how much do you think they should lower for Xbox One X if they're planning to, or PlayStation 4 Pro, let's just say? What is, do you think it's like the right price to lower it down for people who won't be too pissed about the $499 price?
Probably $250. I will ask this question. Why is this becoming price talk?
No, because it's important. People, you know what it is? It's important because, look, man, there's still people to this day that I know doesn't have a PlayStation 4 and doesn't have an Xbox One X or Xbox One, period. So they're thinking, should I go to forget about buying the current gen console? Let me just wait to the next one. But once they find out the price, they're going to be like, should I go with that or what? You know, that's why the conversation. Look, I have friends that doesn't even have a console, but they're debating on buying the next gen console. So that's why I'm bringing it up. It's all good. We could go to the next topic if you want.
No, I only reason I say that is because we're going to be talking about prices for weeks.
Forever.
Yeah, forever. Yeah. Yeah, I do think we should probably just move on to the next topic. And what I'll just jump right into is I had a chance a couple weeks ago to go to a preview event for Outriders. I want to thank Square Enix for inviting me out. The event was out here in Los Angeles, and I got a couple hours hands-on time being able to play it. Unfortunately, I didn't get an opportunity to interview anyone from People Can Fly. They are the developers of this, and they're most famous for Bulletstorm, and they're also the development team that worked on Gears of War Judgment. So I bring both of those up because they were clear inspirations for what Outriders is, and just the, you know, the 411 on Outriders is it is a sci-fi RPG cover shooter. And when I call it a cover shooter, it is in the classic Gears of War style cover shooter. It is also a loot-based game. So as you're going through, you're going to get weapon drops, you're going to get gear drops, you're going to be able, the RPG element comes in because you're going to be able to upgrade your weapons, upgrade your gear. There's crafting that's going to be involved. This is a brand new sci-fi world that they've created. You are one of the Outriders, and there's something that happens to Earth. Look, this is the classic story. We screwed up Earth. Now we send an away team out to go colonize a new planet. We get to the new planet. Oh, no, the anomaly happened, and it changes us forever. So the difference between – the difference between this and just the standard like Gears of War is they're also, after your anomaly, you gain abilities. So there's now four different classes that you can play as. We got to see three of them. One was the Pyromancer, the other was the Trickster, and the third one was the Devastator. We don't know what the fourth one is yet, so they'll announce that at a later date. But like I played as the Pyromancer, so it just gives you these upgradable abilities as well. You know, I was able to do these different fire abilities. Devastator was more of kind of a tank melee build, so kind of up close combat. You know, you were able with your abilities to launch like just these devastating, you know, ground and pound attacks, things like that. I didn't play as the Trickster, but the Trickster also had its own kind of stealth type abilities, things like that. If you watch my gameplay video, the guy I played with, he plays as a Trickster, so you can kind of see it in action. But overall, it was fun. The controls felt good. The you know, the weapons felt tight. I mean, it felt like Gears of War in that sense. But it was a lot of fun. They're gearing this towards the quote unquote next gen PlayStation 5 Series X, but they're also saying there will be versions available in Xbox One and a PlayStation 4. How that rolls out, we'll see. I don't know if all these will be connected or not. It is a 3-person co-op shooter that you get to play. You know, there's bosses. There's some cool side quests in there. There's kind of almost like a quasi nemesis system that is in there from something like Shadow of Mordor. But it was good. It was good. I enjoyed it. It's still early. I mean, there's definitely some things they can improve on. Like we played through a prologue level, which they did not want us to capture, so people couldn't see that for themselves because it was still a little rough, work in progress. The story felt good enough. Like I was interested in the characters. You know, there's some kind of RPG dialogue choices you can make with certain characters, things like that. I'll say this, kind of your hub world, base world is 1,000% what Fort Tarsus should have been in Anthem. I'll say that right now. You'll see some of that in my gameplay too. And that was kind of the other main takeaway I took from this. I felt like this is what Anthem should have been. I mean, clearly, obviously, you're not flying around, but it's a cover shooter. So you have the shooting mechanics along with the abilities and the RPG elements, the loot drops that are coming. It felt good. It's on my radar for sure to see what this is going to be. I can't even talk. I'm sorry. It is slated to come out holiday 2020. If it makes that date, hey, TBD, we know things get pushed back, but they're pushing to have this out holiday 2020. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of competition in holiday 2020, but it's definitely on the radar. So I would suggest anyone listen to this, you go to my YouTube channel, you can see some of more of my impressions there. And I have about 20 minutes of actual gameplay going. So that's Outriders. Yeah, I mean, it is in the sense, like I said, you get these abilities that you can use. And again, this all ties into Destiny, things like that. So you have these abilities that you can use and you can upgrade. But it's also a shooter at its heart. Like, you know, I'm getting it, like LMGs dropping, shotguns dropping, you know, auto rifles dropping. There's all these different weapons dropping. And, you know, there's going to be like common, legendary. I believe there's going to be exotic type weapons as well. So the big thing with this, because people, hey, is this going to be the next Destiny? No, I don't think this is kind of just that true open world. You know, there is a hub world that you get to play and use and all that, but I don't think it's going to be that. It is more, you know, kind of what's the word I'm looking? It's a little more structured than that way, where you're going from level to level. You upgrade world tiers, things like that. But there are side missions that you can do in there, so it's not 100% linear. But the biggest thing that is going to be, and it will have an end game at launch, the devs did confirm that, is how good is the end game going to be? What kind of loot's going to drop in that end game? Is it going to be compelling enough for me to want to keep playing 6 months from now? Or is this going to be a game that I play for a month, I get through it, and I'm done? Another question I got was about multiplayer. Right now, no clue. They did not talk about multiplayer, so I don't know if this has a multiplayer component to it or not. I'm going to guess that it probably does, but how good it is, TBD, we'll see. But like I said, it's something, I'll say this, and this is extremely early. It's good enough that I'm going to want to at least play through it once, you know, to check out the story and see what they're building now. But what the end game turns out to be will be the biggest question mark. And that's what a lot of these games obviously go through. I don't think this is the quote unquote traditional games as a service open world RPG that we're used to now with like Destiny and Division and something like Anthem, but it's kind of a mix of what we got with Gear. You remember how Gears 5 was open world, but it really wasn't open world? That's what this is. I think that's the best way to describe it. So be interesting to see it. It's on the radar. I'm not telling anyone to go run out and get it day one right now. Let's get more information about it over the next few months, but it's on the radar for sure to see how this plays out.
So this is coming out later this year, November, you said?
Well,
November?
they just said holiday 2020, so we'll see.
Holiday 2020.
Yep.
Okay. So, hey, okay. All right, cool. So there you go, man. So if you guys want to watch footage, go to Paris' YouTube channel and make sure to check it out from there, man. All right. So Paris, very quick before we go to our interview, your thoughts, man, about Jeff Keighley skipping E3 for the first time in 25 years.
Well, you know what I think? Not shocked at all. that's and I'm not saying that, you know, to be cocky or arrogant, but this is something we've been talking about the past few years when it comes to E3. And here we are, Sony for the second year with a hardware launch isn't going. Basically, your face of E3 and Jeff Keighley now doesn't think it's worth going. And clearly there's something else going on behind the scenes with this. Excuse me, that has triggered this, but I'm not surprised. Look, I just registered for E3 2020, so let's not get it twisted. I'm gonna go, and same I'm just here. gonna treat it as this is potentially the last ride, and I'm just gonna enjoy it to its fullest. But the thing that, you know, that's been the topic on social media the past, you know, few days has just simply been that maybe E3 for what it was has completely run its course. Now, can they reinvent themselves into something that is viable to continue it? Let's see. This will be the year to see if they can do that. But clearly, publishers are not seeing the value in it anymore. Someone like Jeff Keighley, who has hosted events there, is not seeing the value in it anymore. And they've chosen to not attend. Can the ESA transform this and get everyone to come back? I'm not convinced they can. But hopefully I'm wrong. And I understand. I'll just say this real quick. I understand because a lot of people on social media, they see me just being bluntly honest, and they were, you know, tweeting at me and getting a little upset with like, I don't agree with you because E3 still has value, da da da. And I'm like, look, I get it. This is my 19th year going to E3 this year, right? So I have seen it all. I'm just telling you, this is not the show that it was a decade ago. That's really all I'm saying. And as more and more publishers pull out, that West Hall and South Hall at the convention center is damn near turning into a flea market. Sorry, it just is. Sure, Ubisoft, Bethesda, those guys are still there, but it's not what it was. Can it become something else is all I'm saying. So the people that are fantasizing about the glory days of E3, I'm just telling you right now, it's not that anymore. And the ESA is literally trying to choke me out right now because they don't want me to talk about
Paris is getting emotional here. Like,
excuse me.
It's like Darth Vader from far away. What were you saying about E3?
Yeah. Be quiet.
Paris.
But I'm saying is this, simply, I understand people that have never gone not wanting it to go away because they want to experience that. Trust me, one of the most magical moments of my life was E3 2001, the first time I ever went. I get it. But I'm just saying, you may go now and it's not what you think it is anymore. Hopefully that changes. Hopefully everyone can tweet at me and call me the biggest idiot. Well, they call me idiot anyways, but they can really call me idiot. Oh, you're wrong. See, it's great. I hope I'm wrong. That's all I'm saying. As I choke out, sorry.
And look at that. ESA is still from far away. It's like, Paris, you better say the right thing or else. I don't know, man. I think based on the tweet from Jeff Keighley, he was saying that there's stuff that he found out about this year's E3 that he felt uncomfortable that he doesn't want to be part of it. I'm wondering what it is, because that's something I've never heard from Jeff, you know. So it's gonna be interesting, a very interesting E3. And let me tell you, man, we already found out that Xbox is gonna be involved and Nintendo, but how big is it gonna be compared to the previous years? Because remember last year, Paris, when we got to see when we went to the show floor, it felt weird not seeing, you know, PlayStation. It felt very, very weird not having a booth there from them, you know? So, I don't know.
I mean, hey, look. Change
is good sometimes.
Like, right? I told you before, like going to the Game Awards and breaking the fourth wall, I see Ella is mentioning that as well. Going to the Game Awards this year, what did I tell you? My feedback was it felt like a mini E3, you know, with just the industry people there obviously celebrating all that kind of stuff, and it was kind of cool. Jeff is building the Game Awards into being something huge, to becoming like that must attend event, right? hey, man, it's a businessman. At the end of the day, you try to make that paper, right? So maybe he doesn't see the value in E3 because he's trying to build his own event into becoming something amazing. I mean, hell, look, he literally got the Game Awards to the point that Microsoft saw enough value in it that they revealed their new console there. That's huge.
That's true.
That is huge.
That's huge.
So what's next? What's the next big thing that's going to drop there? You know, again, we'll see how this plays out. I'm just telling you, as before we get to E3 2020, it's not looking good. Maybe we get there and we're all wrong and we're all shocked and go, oh my God, the ESA has figured this out. This is a cool event. Can't wait to come next year. Maybe that happens. I hope so. Mm-hmm. I just don't know.
You know what's the crazy part of all this? As soon as Jeff announced that, within minutes, we got a press release from the ESA.
Mm-hmm.
Panic mode.
Well, again, they have to try and control the message as much as they possibly can. Like again, obviously with the data leak stuff and all that, we just registered for E3. So I just went through that, you know, going to their new website. They're focusing an emphasis on, they weren't trying to get too much of our personal information in their database, which was good. You know, they just wanted the basics, which is good. You know, we can identify ourselves once we actually go to pick up our badges, all that kind of stuff. So people don't have our phone numbers and our personal addresses and all this other information that wasn't necessarily needed. Remember before they used to want a copy of our driver's license. So you'd have that information there and all that. So that's good to try and protect our information as we have to register for the event. Now let's see what the actual event's going to be. You know, we know Microsoft is kind of there. Activision is back. Bethesda's back. Ubisoft's there. Nintendo is still there. There are still publishers that are participating in this. Let's see what they make of it. I mean, not having PlayStation is a huge hole. We saw it last year. It you could feel it walking into West Hall that PlayStation wasn't there. So let's see how they fill the gaps this year.
Yeah, and one thing that Paris mentioned to me once we register is the schedule also changed. So I believe you were saying, Paris,
Me on the spot because I don't want to be wrong. I just remember seeing the schedule.
That's what you said to me when I looked.
I know, but yeah. Remember I told you, I was like, oh, I got to go look again, 100% confirmed. But yeah, the schedule has changed as far as the hours go. It looks like you can get onto the show floor earlier. And again, don't quote me on this. It looks like Tuesday is more of a media only kind of day. I could be wrong. I only looked at it briefly. But it looks like it's a media only day, or at least there's some media specific hours on the first day, which is great. Gamescom, as an example, the first day is media only. They do not let the public in. And that was the only way I was able to actually see all of Gamescom was that first day, because after that, forget it. It was chaos. But yeah, it does look like they're trying to be more accommodating to the media so we can actually get things done when we're there versus when the public comes in and then it's just chaos.
I mean, I'm fine with that, man. It's all good. All right, so we're going to play this interview that I recorded during... I was at OS NYC. I was there because Playcrafting had an event here where they... This is a pretty cool organization. They always like promote like indie games and indie developers. They always have events like here locally in New York. So they had one where they invited... Decoy Games. They're having they're working on a game called Swim Sanity. It's coming out for the Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and also PC. And they've been working on this for a while. So I sat down with them after the event was over, and we had a great conversation about them working on this game and a couple other things, man. So I'm gonna play it right now here on the podcast, and once we come back, we have fan mail. So we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
And I hope you're enjoying this episode of Gamertag Radio, but let's take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Netgear. Is your Wi-Fi feeling old? Does it buffer while streaming? Does connecting new devices slow it down? Can it handle gaming, video calls, large file transfers? And what happens when you try to do it all at once? It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is, if your Wi-Fi router is old and outdated, with Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Wi-Fi 6 is the latest tech that allows more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. The results deliver the fastest Wi-Fi for all your devices anywhere in your home. Stream in HD, 4K, or even in 8K without buffering. Eliminate lag while gaming and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class. If you're ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it today from Netgear and never worry about Wi-Fi again. So check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. That's netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. That's netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. We thank Netgear for sponsoring Gamertag Radio.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're live here at OS at NYC, and I have a pretty cool story here, man. I came here to check out the panel, you know, talk about Swim Sanity, right? Is the name of the game? And it was a very interesting conversation with you guys, man. But we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But you want to present yourself, and we'll go from there, man.
Yeah, so we're Decoy Games. We're the co-founders slash brothers. So I'm Khalil Abdullah. This is my brother.
Ahmed Abdullah.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the game, and we'll go from there, man.
Yeah, so the main reason that we're here is we have a game that's coming out really really soon, Swim Sanity. It's a four-player underwater shooter full of competitive and cooperative game modes where you can play with or against your friends. We have all kinds of game modes, like a free-for-all deathmatch, team deathmatch, capture the flag, elimination mode. But you can also play with each other on the same team. Like, we have a full-blown, like, survival horde mode and adventure as well. Online, Nintendo Switch, Xbox, PlayStation, and Steam. So we have a little bit of something for everyone here.
Yeah, so how you guys came about, like, with the idea of creating this game?
Yeah, so Swim Sanity started as a school project a long time ago. There was a game called Octopus by Nintendo where Mario used to go down to the bottom of the ocean, try to grab gold and bring it back. You remember this game?
Yeah, yeah.
And like
yeah.
A big octopus tried to grab him. So my spin on that game was instead of an octopus, I'd essentially have like, there's like a jellyfish, a squid, a blowfish, and all these like other sea creatures. Yeah. And my art was horrible, but it was like a hyper casual kind of game. And like I was saying on stage, like people started playing it while I wasn't in the room and stuff. So I'd come back and literally see people like laughing about the game.
Yeah.
And Ahmed was kind of, I think he was like a sophomore at the time. And he saw that and he's like, yo, let's like, yeah. Where can we push this? And we wanted to, after a bit of talking, we're like, let's make it a console game. But we knew to make it a console game. We're like, all right, multiplayer. Let's add like some weapons to them. Let's add some special moves. And just like years and years of our iterations kind of got us to the game that we're seeing today.
Yeah, when we took that, what it started as just a flash game, it was really about making that console experience. That was definitely a lot of hurdles in going there, but as Khalil said too, one of the big things we want to do was, as we were self-taught, we also want to be self-published, so it's like, all right, how can we get on these consoles on our own, even though typically publishers are the ones that push you there? So that was a great journey to kind of figure out that process and making the connections in order to kind of cross those bridges.
I want to ask about that because a lot of the indie developers, when they create a game, well, the majority of the time they're releasing it on like PC, Steam, and so on, right? How difficult was it to have your game on the consoles like, you know, PlayStation 4, Xbox, and Nintendo Switch?
Yeah, it's a lot of it is, we kind of said before, is asking for more than you need probably, and also making those connections. When we entered the industry, we knew our weakness was we weren't like ex-developers of some big game or had those connections. So what we had to do was make sure that what we do best, which is show our game, show people are enjoying it. And if we can catch them in that moment, we felt like we can show them like, hey, this is something that can make you money, basically. So when we met like Sony, that was like at PAX East. When we were at Microsoft, that was at Boston Fig. We had a good crowd. And then Nintendo, we were at Game Devs of Color. So we knew that was like the position we had to start the conversation. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was all about just taking initiative and keep pushing and pushing toward the goal that saying like, hey, like this is something we feel confident about. And what can we do to you know, get that out there?
You guys mentioned about Nintendo Direct. So they actually showed your game at the Nintendo Direct. So how was your reaction seeing it? during that, the
that was, that, like I said, that was a crazy moment because I also, I'll say this, like, aside from our game, first of all, I never knew the power, like, the push. Like, people always talk about the power of Nintendo. They can literally, like, sneeze online and just everyone will talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty good at marketing.
Like, yeah, and it's crazy. So, I mean, you, like, when I knew I was going to be in a direct, I knew it would definitely be our biggest marketing push. But then they post a trailer up there, and in the time that it took us to watch the trailer and get back online to YouTube, we were up to like 20,000 views or something like that. And
wow. It was 35,000 views, ended up being so quick.
But it's not just the views, and you're seeing all these different outlets and stuff. They're sharing it. They're getting like thousands and thousands of views and stuff like that. Now you see a bunch of people know SimSanity and like just off one short video Nintendo posted. But that was really like a super surreal moment, you know, growing up playing SNES and N64 and stuff like that. And, you know, even just seeing the Nintendo Switch trailer open and everything, that was just really cool to see.
I bet you guys got goosebumps and everything, right?
Still do. Yeah. Honestly, still do.
You know what? The problem that I see with indie developers when they create a game, they are very afraid to show it to the world. They'll show it to other developers, but the actual gamers, they're so terrified to do that, man.
Yeah.
Do you guys have that moment, like, scared, like, okay, this is the first time we're going to show the game?
So it's funny because, like,
I'm ready.
No, so that's a funny thing, and I tell developers that a lot of time. I'm like, guys, stop showing your stuff to other developers. Like, I'm all about, like, the networking and getting to know your peers.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's not the same. That's not your target audience, right? Like, their feedback doesn't even make sense to what you're trying to do.
Yep.
And it's great to, like, meet these people and stuff like that, but you got to get out there and show your stuff to gamers. And that's why, like, a lot of the games that, like, indie developers make, it's like they don't make that commercial leap because, like, you guys made a game that developers like. So you guys are showing off this, like, weird tech stuff that it's cool between us two. We're like, oh, it was really cool for you to make that. But will someone realistically take that and put that into their console, play it, turn it off, wake up in the morning and play it again? That's what makes like a real commercial game.
Mm-hmm. And we love showing off the things that we work so hard to do. So like that's just fun to us. And it's also, like you said, being able to interact with those people is one of the funnest things. All the people here, I mean, these are people that played our game over and over. So like we enjoy talking to them. We enjoy getting their feedback and seeing that community build. So I agree. I hope more independent developers become comfortable with showing to the audience, not just to build a community, but also like that's your money right there.
Yeah,
to show
exactly.
to those gamers.
Yeah.
So that's what you want. That's what you want to do. If they don't see you enjoying that process, then that's less likely they'll enjoy the game. I think we show the fact we like our game a lot. I do think that helps them enjoy it more. They'll be like, oh, yeah, I feel like I should enjoy this. They seem they're into it.
So right before you guys started speaking about the game, I know you showed like a little video collage. And I noticed that you guys also got awards. It was for this game too?
Yeah, that was all for this game.
So how was that, like, that moment, you know?
So I have two sides. So getting the awards, first of all, I'll say that those are always awesome moments. We'll never forget those. When I tell you we keep all of our awards at a special place, like, we really mean that. The funny thing with us is that, like, a lot, like he was saying before, like, a lot of these awards that we submitted to, just to talk about, like, the journey, like, we've been rejected, like, some of them once, some of them up to, like, seven times.
Wow.
And for us, when you get that award, it's like, we've already, since just going through the process itself is awarding it on its own. And, like, the award's awesome, but that's, we've already kind of, like, you know, like, guys, we did everything we could up to this point. So in a way, like, we give ourselves the awards, like, hey, guys, we did what we know we needed to do. And whether or not someone else acknowledges that, like, we'll take it if it's there. But if not, we'll just keep grinding. Like, tomorrow's another day. Let's keep doing this. So the award's really just kind of like a pinnacle along the way. But the grind is really like the kind of like that step-by-step process of like, all right, like, I'm going to bed tonight knowing I put in like my blood, sweat, and tears. Like, that's kind of the awards that you get.
Yo, you know what's crazy? Like, it reminds me so much about me, man. Like, we could relate because I get it, man. Like, a lot of the younger generation, they feel like they just want to take shortcuts to get on top. To me, I'd rather just grind and get to the top, you know? But what do you think about that? A lot of developers, they just want to, like, be successful so quick, you know? Like,
I mean, like, I could tell you good job right now, right? I'm like, yo, you're doing a good job on this podcast. And you're going to be like, oh, that's cool. But then you're not going to go home and, like, you know, like, it's like, you know how much work you already put into it.
Yeah.
So like, that shouldn't, like, the pat on the back shouldn't be what, like, makes you keep on going. Like, you have to have that self-motivation. But, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to have a plan together. You know what your goals are. Like, and the same thing you have to do in this industry. As we said, it's a little different in the sense that there is a stigma where they don't treat it as, like, a business, treat themselves as a business. And, like, any other industry would do that, especially stuff like music. We always talk about, like, you brought the whole mixtape thing. Even someone just showing mixtapes on the street, Like, they know marketing. They know they have to pass out those mixtapes in order for someone to do that. Like, it's the same thing with games. They can't just sit behind your keyboard and type and then hope, you know, put it on the store and be like, why is no one playing it? Mm-hmm. It's like, have you even taken the chance to figure out what is your avenue of getting it out there? But there's, you got to take all those steps. And it, and success is measured in all different ways. So, like, if you just want to complete a game and that's what your goal is, then go for it. That's awesome. Like, good for you. And but if you want to also make money, like, then you got to look at the process of people that also took that path and what they did. Because usually, like, they've taken a lot of steps, possibly made some sacrifice to get that game out there.
You know, one thing that stood out to me, what you guys said, is that personal connection. Nothing could beat that, man. Because if you just stay home and just be behind a computer the whole time, you're going to miss a lot of opportunities, man. And I feel like by you going to all these events, that's how you start getting connections with Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo, right? What advice would you give that to developers that they're just afraid to go out, afraid to show the game to the world? Why is it important to have that connection
like
with
people? You've already done the hard part. Like, you're making the game. Yeah. Like, you've already done the hard part. Just get out there and show it. But, I mean, if it's a matter of nerves, first of all, you'll get over it. I used to be nervous a lot talking in front of people, but everyone makes mistakes. Everyone gets nervous. Yeah. You'll get over it. But the other thing I said on stage two is, like, if it's really that much of a struggle for you, we all have that friend or family member who actually is good at, they don't even have to know games, right? Get that guy who doesn't mind going out and talking in front of people and be like, yo, this is, let's come up with a pitch. I'm going to make the game. I'll stand beside you just in case it breaks, but you're going to pitch the heck out of this every single time we go out to a show. Like,
yeah,
come out and sell my game and we'll work together to the top of this thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've had some back and forth with some developers who are like, hey, you should go to this show and it's cheap. You might need to go maybe on a train or something, but go to it because there's so many people there. You got to show it. And some are like, eh, I don't know. But it's just like, yeah, you got to understand what the value is to going to some of these events and connecting with people. Mm-hmm. So part of it is definitely getting past wanting to even be comfortable with showing off your game. But part of it is, like, you got to just have that business mindset of, like, okay, what is the ROI of me going to this event?
Yeah.
We see that in a lot of events with Playcrafting here. Like, we don't miss Playcrafting events. Like, there's too much ROI. Everything.
I was gonna ask you about that. Like, why Playcrafting? Why work with them? Cause they've been involved a lot with a lot of events here locally, right, in New York.
So why we like Playcrafting a lot is because they bring gamers to the events. And those gamers are the one that are your consumers, as opposed, you know, developers possibly getting together. And they're very consistent on bringing those people together, whether it's on their free events, which it can be just at the Microsoft building, bringing thousands of people.
Yeah.
It's consistent. And that's what allows us to gain people that follow our game, but also we can use them as testers and things like that. It's been very consistent, and we make sure we don't ever miss that. It doesn't matter where we are in our development cycle. Like, this is coming up. We got to go there. If we have to show the older build, it doesn't matter. It just keeps that momentum going for us.
Yeah. So this game was designed for multiplayer, local co-op, right? And also online. But I noticed that there's also a solo mode too. So what's the difference between that?
Yeah, so pretty much all of our modes can be played 1 to 4 players. And that really comes from us, like I said, being SNES, N64 gamers, where you didn't have online play, right? Maybe you didn't have 2 controllers in the house. So that we always make sure that there's an aspect of the game for solo, whether it's playing the versus modes with bots, or even like our campaign mode where you can actually run it solo. We actually have special awards in the game for people who do complete the challenges solo. So, mm-hmm. You can play this game solo. You can play it online. You can play it local with friends. We want to make sure no matter what kind of situation you have at home, you can enjoy some sanity to the fullest.
Have you guys ever thought about, like, doing crossplay through the process of developing the game, or not really?
Yeah, we put a lot of thought into it. That's all I can say.
Is it going to happen in the game or not?
I can't
really
announce anything.
All
yet,
right, so no comment on that.
No comment.
All right, cool, man. So where people could find more information about the game? I know there's probably no release date yet.
Decoy Games. We're going to be on Twitter, Instagram. We are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can also search us Slim Sanity on Discord if you want to talk to the developers. Chris is also up there as well.
So,
like I said, always look out for us on social media. We're always posting all of our events. We're very accessible. Even if you see us at our event and we have a crowd, walk to the front, tap us on the shoulder, and trust us, we'll get someone out in the front to talk to you.
I know you guys are going to have an event in a couple weeks, so you want to mention that very quick?
Yeah, February 21st, it's an event called Game On. We're focusing on Black excellence in the game industry. We have some great moderators and speakers up there. Erin is going to be from Cheddar Esports is going to be up there. She's doing great stuff for the community. We got Hip Hop Gamer that's going to roll through. Aziza Brown, Jay Watts. It just list keeps going on and on. It's going to be a free event at the Microsoft store. You're going to see what people of color are doing great in the industry. We're not going to talk about the struggles. We know the struggle. We want to talk about the excellence that is going on to bring more light to the people, yes, that are doing things,
yes,
so that, and also create a moment where we can all connect and actually see how we can push this industry forward together. Because we're actually going to bring in people into that room that typically cover other entertainment where we thrive in music, movies, and they're going to see when they have the entertainment tab on their website that needed to make sure they cover games more, because we're a huge part of that as well. So we're going to start that movement there, and we're going to see that build over the years. So that's we want to invite everyone to come, yeah, February 21st, Microsoft Store, 6 to 9.
And it's free.
It's free.
Exactly.
Man.
Like, yeah. Yeah. One last question. Why people should buy your game, Swinsanity?
Because it can be played by anybody, but there's also levels to the game. So you're going to play it the first time, and it's very simple and easy for you to understand. Like I said, there's a lot of levels of expertise, and you're going to realize that as you start to play different like status of players. So it's a lot of fun for all different age types, all different types of gamers.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I'm proud of the game, we're pricing at $24.99, but the content really matches like a AAA type of content at like $60 with the online and local play. People are going to realize when they jump the game, like, wow, this is something that we really like. A lot of people come to these conventions and only play 3 minutes of our competitive mode. They're like, I'll get this. But yeah, we actually had a few group of people play our test beta. And when they saw what was in the game, we have over 150 challenges to complete just to go through all the game. And they're like, okay, this is a lot bigger than I thought, because we don't even show everything. So I think the thing that I'm proud of, and also I think people would really want to buy the game, is the fact that it's a complete product day one. It's polished day one, which is tough to find these days lately. Even AAA titles, like, people are coming out with unpolished content. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's why we're taking our time, because we do think that's really important to bring out a polished game on the first day that's on all platforms.
Cool, man. I just want to say I'm excited to actually play the game in a few minutes. And I'm excited to see the feedback from everybody once the game releases to the masses, man. Yeah, and I think it's good, man. We need more people of color, man, in the industry 100%. Too, man. Yeah, I've been in the industry for a very long time. And when I started, I was like, I feel like I was the only Latino doing this. You know what I'm saying?
It's scary sometimes.
So seeing you guys creating your own game, man, yo, it's very inspiring, man. That's so awesome. Keep it up, man.
That means a lot.
Yeah. Good luck, man.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
Awesome. This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, Paris. So we have a couple of questions here for fan mail. So we're going to play here right now in a few seconds here. So shout out first to Decoy Games. That was a pretty cool interview. Make sure to follow them on Twitter. And they're going to have an event actually here in New York on February 21st. It's going to be a totally free event at the Microsoft store. So for more information, go to their Twitter account for more information. All right. All right. So it's time for fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right, Paris. So we have a couple questions here. I have also a couple of emails if you want me to read those later. So it's up to you.
You're the host.
I'm the captain now?
Yeah, you're the host. You're the host of the show. All right, I control the voicemails, but I can't stop you from reading an email.
No, that's true. Well, go with the voicemail first.
Let's go into the first one here.
All right, let's go.
Hey, Gamer Tag Radio, it's Yago here. Congratulations on getting Phil Spencer on your Dalton's episode, and I'm just looking forward to what's to come for the future of Gamer Tag Radio and just gaming in general. You guys do a tremendous job of highlighting everything within the industry, within the ecosystem. And I definitely agree with Paris on a lot of things, such as being critical, yet being respectful. And I've mentioned that on social media, on Twitter, and on my podcast as well. It's good to be critical on things that you love. Also be respectful and positive. Thank you guys so much. And congratulations once again.
All right. Well, thank you for the kind words there. And yeah, the Phil Spencer interview, we talked about that on episode 1001, Mandy. But thank you for the feedback on that. And Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, we obviously had a lot of fun doing that, and I appreciate everyone out there that has been sharing it on social media. We've seen various other media sites pick it up, talk about it, other podcasts talking about it as well. I really appreciated how candid Phil was about certain things. And just like he just mentioned at the end, when Phil basically just talked about how we're viewed, Gamer Tech Radio, how we're viewed internally over there at Xbox, and that we're fair. And, you know, I know me, you know, if you follow me on social media, I don't bite my tongue on anything. But that's kind of the way it should be. You can like a brand, but still criticize it. If it's earned, you know, if it's valid, if you see something about it that you don't like. And I'm going to shift slightly and I'm going to bring up The Division as an example. The Division is a game I really like. I've ever since, remember, it took me years before I actually would start playing it, right? And then finally I got convinced to jump in and start playing it on the first one. And then obviously for The Division 2, I've been there since day one. I will always say that it had the best campaign story leading you up into end game. Once you got to end game with the Black Tusk, was fantastic. You know, do the strongholds, all that, fantastic. The raid was fantastic. The Division 2 suffered from not having a lot to do once you got to that, right? So it got very stagnant for at least a good 5 to 6 month period, you know, as we now roll up here to Warlords of New York. And I was critical of that. And I talked about that, but it was fair feedback. And I already know that the people over at Massive appreciated that. And there were offline conversations that happened about that. And that's great. You know, you can do that. Same with Xbox. You know, I was on Xbox's ass with 20. Me and Mandy were Wonder Twins. Wonder Twin Powers Activate. We were talking about all the mistakes that they made at launch. Connect, just everything that happened at launch, the bad messaging, all of that, right? But we knew internally they wanted to hear that. They needed to hear that to fix the issues that they were having. And look where we are now. We're now going into a next generation and Xbox has completely transformed itself. There's nothing wrong with being critical if you're fair about it. I'm critical of Destiny. Hell, I was just on a 2-hour podcast earlier this week. Shout out to Say No to Rage. And we literally talked about why I'm not currently not playing Destiny. And it isn't because I hate the game. I love the game. But right now, I don't like this season. So I've not participated in it. But I'll be back. But it's okay to have that feedback. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. To me, hearing Phil say that was so validating for me personally to know that, okay, I must be doing something right. Because I will talk about the things that I don't like, but I will never be disrespectful about it. Or at least I try not to be. Anyways, I might joke like Stadia, blah, 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 but tell me anything I said that was a lie to Stadia. And if I ever had a chance to sit down with people at Google and talk about my grievances with Stadia, I would have an adult conversation about it. You know, it's okay to criticize these things, you know, just be respectful about it.
Here's the thing though, Paris, and you know, shout out to the caller for saying those things, and everybody else been hitting us up about that, about the comments that not only Phil but also the whole Xbox team, that's how they feel about us and the show overall. So that's really, really cool, and I thank them for that. But the thing that people also need to realize, like, it's just honest feedback. We have different opinions about things, and the listeners and even people that work at companies, they can't take things personal too, man. You know, because let me tell you, Paris, just behind the scenes, I heard that there's probably people pissed off about your comments about Stadia, you know, but you're being honest, and that's what a lot of people feel about the service right now. And I want them to succeed because we have friends that works over there. You know what I'm saying? So I just feel that. Also, the listeners, please, for the love of God, don't take it personal, man. Like, I remember in 2013 when Paris and Mandy, and I think also Pete, were talking so much about Xbox One, like, the messaging was bad and everything, right? People took it personal, and they will go and give us bad reviews and call us out on Twitter and all this stuff because they I don't know what it is, man. It's like I was telling you, Paris, the other day, I feel like all these gamers, they feel like they're, like, part of a cheerleader team or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, they always want their favorite company to win. But it's supposed to be just gaming overall, man. Isn't it good for us to give good feedback for all these companies? Imagine us being just nice and saying, oh, great things about Xbox. There would have not been no Xbox Game Pass, no Project X Cloud, none of that stuff, man. It's all about the feedback, man. Especially we played the Division, Warlords of New York, Paris, right? Like, what was the thing that we were saying for a while? Content. We need more, better loot. We gave feedback to Massive. And look, we went and got to play this expansion, and it got us excited about the game again.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong about being honest, man.
No.
There's nothing wrong with that, man. I just don't want people to take it personal. For the love of God, don't take it personal, man. Everything's going to be all right.
Oh, by the way, because I don't, well, I know we're doing feedback right now, but before I forget, Project X Cloud is on iOS, and we have not talked about that. So they are released 10,000 people, they said, or something, or iOS.
Yeah, it's only 10,000.
Both you and I were fortunate enough to get in on that. So we've had it. So, and only on iOS right now, it's a Master Chief Collection. So I played it on my iPhone and all that. And I just picked up an iPad Pro yesterday, and I was playing Halo 3 on my iPad Pro, you know, Bluetooth with Xbox controller. Dude, it worked great. That big old screen, it looked fantastic. It controlled fine. Now I'm doing it in my house. I'm not like on you know, LTE or anything like that, but in my house on Wi-Fi, it worked great. It was fine. I did do it on my iPhone via LTE, and it worked pretty well. You know, I was like, I had to wait on my wife. We were scrambling around Friday and getting some car repairs done. So while I was sitting waiting for her, I was just in the car, and I just propped it up on my iPhone. I started playing, and it worked fine. And I even tweeted at the time, this is the way cloud streaming is going to work in the short term future, right? Because the infrastructure isn't there. That is the primary way you're going to play. But these short bursts where you can get some gameplay time in, you know, while you're killing time on a bus or doing whatever, this is the future. This will work. Absolutely, it will work. And I'm not just saying it's Project X Cloud. I think GeForce Now, and if Stadia's technology works, we've never argued that, but Stadia just needs more content, you know, and they just need to live up to the promises that they already made. But once they get to that point as well, it's going to be fine. Just don't expect it to be the only way that you game. You're still going to want to have a quote unquote hardware version of the game as well to play and not just cloud stream it. But in short bursts as a supplement, worked just great. Loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, look, I had a, right before I was traveling to San Francisco, I was at the LaGuardia Airport, and I grabbed my phone, my Android device, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to play some Xbox, man. I had my controller with me, and I was playing, man, for like a good hour. I was just playing multiplayer, so on, with Gears 5, and then a little bit with Halo, and it plays great, man. It's really, really good. And this is a perfect example, Paris. Imagine you playing Cyberpunk. You have to leave. You're traveling, let's say, somewhere, and you want to continue the story. You pop up, you grab your iPad, pop up you know, the app, put it on, pick Cyberpunk, and you could play and continue the story that you left, you stopped playing from home.
Yeah, and that's my use case for it. It would be something like that where I'm on the go and I just want to check in on something really quick. Hey, I can go do it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Or I need to finish this up really quick. I can jump in and go do it. To me, that's where cloud gaming is going to work in the short term. I mean, maybe we have a different conversation 10 years from now. But now, as we're launching here in 2020 with all this stuff, to me, that's the way to be able to play it.
Definitely. All right. So let's play the next voicemail.
You don't tell me what to do.
Yeah, I'll tell you what to do.
No, I'm not playing it. How about that? All right. Hold on.
What's going on, Gamertag Radio crew? Just want to go ahead and say thank you so much for all your guys' hard work, first and foremost. This is Mike, a.k.a. Hungry Bear, all the way in Miami, Florida. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about Halo. First of all, congratulations on episode 1000. Having Phil in there is going to be pretty awesome. I can't wait for that. It's actually dropping on my birthday. So I know you guys are working really hard over there, so thank you for that. I'm super excited for that episode and can't wait to see what Phil has to say. And I know you guys are going to do an awesome job, and this is going to go get better from here on out. But Paris and Danny, I've been hearing you guys talk a lot about Infinite, or not, just a little bit more than usual, and I completely agree. if Infinite doesn't do great at launch, it's going to hurt the Halo community, it's going to hurt the Xbox community, and it's going to hurt the Xbox brand in general, and the franchise, the Halo franchise. I don't think it'll be put in a good place at all if it doesn't fully execute a perfect launch or a successful launch. You know, we have been talking, hopefully, that one of the things that would be needed is Halo Infinite would launch with everything in-game day one. But my question to you guys is this. What do you think about Halo Infinite being a games as a service? I mean, the name is not there for nothing. There's infinite possibilities. Aaron Greenberg had mentioned a couple of things about there being something added onto Halo Infinite. And so my question to you guys is, what do you think about Halo Infinite as a games as a service, and how would that be approached by Microsoft? What would be the best way to execute that? Again, thank you so much for your guys' time, and keep it up, man. All right, take care.
Hey, thank you for that voicemail. Truly appreciate it. We've seen him around on social media, part of Discord channel and all that. So we appreciate all the support. Halo Infinite. He's right. Yes. This is something that we have definitely been talking a lot about the past few weeks, because obviously we're now in 2020 and we know this is going to be arguably the biggest game that Microsoft has ever made. And he brings up that great point about, is Halo Infinite going to be a game as a service, right? So I think it is. I think that's why it rumored has a $500 million budget right now. I think that's why it is called Halo Infinite. I think that's why the first teaser we saw showed an open world. They're going to go all in with this. It's again, we know nothing about the game, which is so fascinating that we're potentially about 10 months away from it coming out and we still know nothing. I'm again assuming that E3 is going to be the big reveal for it. I'll pause right there and just say, if you follow me on social media, Bonnie Ross and I had a little conversation on Twitter, and your boy is going to redeem himself at E3 2020. Bonnie Ross, Gamertag Radio, we're doing it, the Redemption Tour. I can't wait. It's going to be exciting.
You weren't nervous, right?
No, I was not nervous. I can't wait. And I'll just full disclosure on that. So, yes, publicly we talked about it, and there were some offline conversations as well. 100% it's going to happen. I'm going to get a chance to sit down with Bonnie Ross after they reveal Halo Infinite, and we just kind of, you know, obviously we'll joke around about the old interview, and then obviously we'll talk about whatever Halo Infinite's going to be and just the future Halo and all that good stuff. Should be, trust me, I'm super excited. It's going to be a fantastic conversation. But going back to Halo Infinite, I expect it to be some kind of open world. They're going to have some ongoing content. It'll be interesting, in my opinion. Again, we know the game is about Master Chief. So you're going to be playing as Master Chief, Cortana, and all that. But once you're done with that story, are we playing as another Spartan? And then that's when it kind of goes into the open world stuff. How is all that going to work? Obviously, the multiplayer component is going to be huge with Halo Infinite. How is all that going to go down? I'm excited to just see what the hell it's going to be. Because like I said it to Phil Spencer, I've said it all the time. This is the most important game they have ever made. They cannot screw this up. They cannot. This has to hit. It has to work. Or it potentially could kill the franchise. And obviously Microsoft doesn't want that to happen. So I'm sure they got some of the smartest people on the planet working on this game. They're throwing all the money they need at it to make sure that everything works. It is fantastic at launch, which we assume will probably be November of this year.
Do you think it's going to be kind of similar to Destiny? Not the RPG part, but more of like working together, boss battles. And of course, they're going to be the multiplayer side, which, you know, Microsoft is going to invest so much on like esports from that side. But I'm talking about like more of the PvE side. Paris?
I'm expecting, and again, to just borrow from, you know, a previous studio that worked on it, I'm expecting some type of Destiny type element to this game as far as co-op goes. And, you know, not they're going to just cookie cutter call it a strike or a raid or things like that. But Halo Infinite has to have some kind of end game to it, and it has to have some kind of loot table to it that makes it interesting. So are they going to embrace more of the RPG side of Halo? We don't know. That's what's so fascinating about this. I have no idea. No idea what they're going to do with this. So again, E3, I'm trust me. And I'm convinced now. I'll say this right off the top. I'm convinced now they're kicking the show off with Halo Infinite. I'm calling it now. That's my Miss Leo. They're kicking the show off with it. There's like, they're just going to put all the cards on the table. Let's just get it going. Get everyone hype. Halo Infinite to start the show. That's what I think.
Yeah. The only thing we make sure they have that we're inside and not miss the first few minutes like last time. It's all good. Now, I'm going to break the fourth wall here. Ella posted about this, that she's a bit worried about how little we have heard about Infinite so far. And here's the thing. Marketing-wise has changed throughout the years. Like, the one thing I remember that Paris was talking about Gears 5 the whole time is like, oh, the single player, I'm a little bit worried. We found out about the single player, like, what, a month or two before it came out? Was it something like that?
Yeah, it was like right, you know, before. So, it was like a month before, yeah.
Exactly. Now, and also think about, let's go with the music side. Like, you know, like artists like Eminem and Beyonce and Jay-Z, sometimes they release albums and we hear about it when it comes out. And people will go crazy, like, oh my God. And they'll go to Spotify and they'll stream the music right away, right? Before, they'll hype it up. Oh, it's coming out on this day. For months, we hear about that. We don't see that anymore with music. And I think gaming is going towards that too a little bit. That they don't need to, companies don't need to really promote all these games for months. You know what I'm saying? I think with the information that we have now, we're very excited about it. And I think at E3, we're going to hear a little bit more. And probably a month or two before the game comes out, there's going to be other stuff that we're going to find out too. So marketing has changed, man. Do you remember Paris, the first time you heard about Halo 2? I think it was a story campaign. You were you went to that E3.
Yeah, I was there.
And mm-hmm. that was one of like the most iconic demos that still to this day people talk about it, how they were promoting it. But remember, that was like 2 years before the game came out. We don't see that anymore when it comes to demos. I think Mass Effect, the first Mass Effect, I went to the Microsoft booth and actually BioWare showed us the game. And it was very, really early. That was like 2 years before the game came out. Again, we're not seeing that anymore, man, at all. So we just
look at Fallout 4. Nobody even knew about that game. Well, aside Kotaku for leaking it, but they didn't talk about that game until the E3 before it came out that holiday. No one even knew it existed. And then boom, here you go, done. I do agree. It is changing. And like Gears 5 is a great example of that, because I was complaining about them not showing a campaign for a while. And then it was like, oh, wait, now I see why you kept it close to the vest. I think just, you know, going along with what Ella was saying, I just think they're keeping things very close to the vest. They don't want to overpromise anything. So you wait until this E3 to actually start talking about it. And then you just have just this full on reveal of everything. And I think E3 is almost just going to be a celebration of Halo Infinite, where you're just going to see all these people from 343 just talking about the various, you know, the multiplayer, the story, all this to just full on thing. And it's just a celebration throughout the entire summer of Halo. And then we'll get it. Like, I'll ask you this, Danny, do you think they do it? Do you? Okay. Again, Miss Leo, we're way ahead of time, but Miss Leo.
Hey, darling, this is certified psychic Miss Leo. Now, I can usually tell you things about your future by using the power of my tarot cards. But when it comes to video games, only the guys at Gamertag Radio can give you the predictions. You hear me?
I think they announce a beta at E3 during the summer, because they're going to want to stress test this thing.
And I agree. And you know how? Game Pass subscribers will be part of the beta.
Yep.
That how it is right now with Bleeding Edge.
Yeah.
You could try it out that beta right now if you're an Xbox Game Pass subscriber. Smart. And at the same time, that will push people to subscribe. They'll say, you could try this out for 3 months for $1 or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So I can see that happening. Now, my question to you is, I think during E3, when they reveal the game and they show everything, I think we're only going to see parts of campaign, PvE, something like that, right? And then when we'll go and go to the showcase later that day or the next day, we're going to try out the multiplayer. So us, the journalists and the content creators, will capture it or just talk about it and post it online and everything. I think that's how it's
going to
be.
I do agree with that. I definitely agree. They're going to have, they're going to want the press, excuse me, to be able to get hands-on with whatever the multiplayer is going to be and talk about it and show it to everyone, blah, blah, blah. And then later that summer, have like a full-on beta or something. Dude, maybe they even do it around Gamescom time. And then I could see, oh, dude, now that I've been to Gamescom and I know how big it is and I've seen it, I could totally see them having a Halo Infinite just multiplayer like arena so that, you know, you get a bunch of people at one time on there playing hands-on, talking about it. So yeah, totally. I totally can see this happening.
Well, hold on before you play the next voicemail.
I'm not.
You know what's
but go
even
ahead.
Possible? You know what's possible though, Paris? Phil on Stasis or Bonnie Ross could say it's available right now. That's possible too.
I don't think
that
so.
That happened before.
I don't think
that
so.
That happened before a long time ago. We there was a time there that Xbox has done that many times.
I don't think so.
Okay.
See, I'm going to be you where you love to just crush all my dreams. No, like, no, I don't think that's going to happen. But and the reason why I don't think they would do it like that, because I think they're going to want us to play it first and talk about it and create even more hype about it and show the capture footage. And then, hey, Game Pass, because again, they can use it to sell Game Pass. Get Game Pass, you get to play, blah, blah, blah. July 15th, everyone, come on. You know, they'll have a big marketing thing around, I think. You know, but
well, hey, let me dream.
No, I don't want you to dream. I know you said play a voicemail, but I actually want to touch on one last topic. I think we probably should wrap it up at this point, but again, you're the host, so maybe I'm wrong. Rod Ferguson left. He went to Blizzard.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, speaking of Gears, he left.
Yeah.
Kind of, that was out of nowhere, man. That was a shocker.
You know what? I'm not surprised. At the end of the day, it's all about money, money, money.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it's not about like the company's going downhill or anything like that. Because there was tweets from gamers saying that. I'm like, nah, it's not about that. Dude, Rod been doing this. Gears has been his baby for years.
Yeah.
Years.
Yep.
Change is good, man. Change is good. And I bet you Blizzard offered him a lot of money for him to buy.
Oh, he got a bag. He got a bag. There's no doubt. Think about it now. Mike Ybarra has gone down to Blizzard. Now Rod Ferguson's gone down to Blizzard, and he's heading up the Diablo franchise. Hey, I mean, you know, he's done Gears for so long. I mean, he has a reputation in the industry of being the fixer. Like, he came into Gears to get the original Gears off the ground, Gears 2, I think, or whatever it was. And then he obviously famously came in to get BioShock Infinite out the door because they were having issues. And then, obviously, Microsoft just flat out bought the Gears IP, started the coalition. They bring him in to restart the franchise. And I think he has left Gears 5 in a good place. Like Gears 5 was a good game.
Yes.
I do think part of it is, where the hell do they go next? I do wonder. It's going to be, I do think Gears, whatever Gears 6 is going to be, is going to need to kind of change it up a little from where it is, because we've done this style, and I know it went quasi open world, but we've been doing this style for well over a decade at this point. Mm-hmm. So I do want to see Gears take a risk and try something new. But we'll see. We'll see what it is. Clearly, he's not going to be the one to do it. He's moved on. But it just goes to show. And I'm forgetting his name, so I apologize for this. But also the person that left from Rockstar. Was it Dan? What was his name?
Oh, the co-founder.
Yeah. He left.
Yeah.
Dude, he's been doing this for how long? Sometimes you just got to change it up, man. You just can't keep doing the same thing over and over. And it'll be interesting to see where he winds up as well.
Yep.
You know?
You know what? Yeah. It's, look, man. You only live once. It's good to try out new things, man. There's nothing wrong with change. The majority of people are really afraid of change. And I used to be that type of person back then. But I think it's fine, man, to change things up, man. I don't see nothing wrong with that, man.
You know, yeah, completely agree.
Yeah. Sometimes, look, man, if you don't try it out, you're going to regret it. You're going to have that... like, you're going to be thinking about that for the rest of your life, man. Like, man, what if I would have done that? You know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But Paris, so no, not even one more voicemails. That's it.
We've been doing this an hour. Yeah. You call it, host. You tell me.
Well, okay. One more voicemail. One more. And that's it. And then we'll wrap it up.
All right. One more voicemail.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Two is not a, yeah.
All right. Playing it now.
All right.
Yo, this is Jay from upstate New York. Just shouting you guys out, man. I know your 1,000th episode's coming up, and I just want to say congratulations. I got to say, you're the only podcast related to gaming that I can really trust, that I listen to, that I can even relate to. It's just the way it is. I really appreciate you guys, and I've been listening for a bit now. So keep it up. And, wish you all the best on your future episodes. I'm out.
Hey, GamerTown Radio, it's Paul from Seattle. Hello, Godfrey and Paris. Hey, the big thing is I'm saving up right now for the Xbox Series X, but I'm also saving up for another big purchase that I think a lot of gamers are missing out to get that full effect for the new systems for the PS5 and Series X is a brand new TV. A lot of the TV tech. Can you guys speak on some of the TV tech that we're going to be looking for? Like, there's a lot of gamers out there not going to understand when they get these new next gen boxes that they're not going to be able to take advantage of the full graphics, like having if your TV doesn't have HDMI 2.1. I'd like to hear what you guys have to say about that. Thank you.
All right, Danny, that's all you. Go for it.
Me? I don't, dude. That's all you. I was about to say that to you, like, yo, Pirates, this is all you, man. I play with any TV. I'm not really that picky. Like, actually, I bought the, I have it in Miami now, but I bought the Samsung Series 6, no, 7. It wasn't the oldest. It wasn't the newest. It was like in the middle, and it looked good. But, you know, people are like, Paris, no, he wants the latest, the latest tech when it comes to TV. So, you want to mention what you have, Paris?
And no, I don't want to mention what I have. I want to talk about his actual question. You're not answering his question. That's not his question. He doesn't care what I have. No, I'm just being an a-hole. Being serious for a second. So, I get what he means, and he's right in that sense that there's so many different options out there right now for televisions. Which ones do you need? What do you not need? So, again, as an example, I have a Sony, and I forget the exact model right now, but it's a 65-inch. It does Dolby Vision. It does HDR10. It has Android TV built in. It does have HDMI 2.1, I do believe, or is it 2.0? Mm-hmm. I forget, but it at least has HDMI 2.0. So I can do over two of my HDMI inputs. It can do 4K 60. Another one can do 1080p 120 hertz, things like that. So I know all that stuff kind of gets confusing. So you got to get a look at this. You could get OLED, which is high end. Samsung has QLED. There's micro LED that's coming out now. I know TCL does something like that. So these are just kind of the different displays that you can get. You have VA panels, you have IPS panels, but the basics really for the average person that's not just as high-end enthusiast is clearly you want a TV that can do 4K, you know, 21p resolution. You're going to want it to be able to do at least 60 hertz, so 60 frames per second, you know. And when it comes to HDR, you want it at a minimum to be able to do HDR10. If it can do Dolby Vision, that is great. If it has HDMI 2.1, that kind of future-proofs you so that when 8K and all that stuff comes in, because it's a higher bandwidth, you're going to be able to do that. But at a minimum, you're going to want HDMI 2.0. You know, those are kind of the basics to look for. And it's crazy. Like, I saw Fat Kid Deal had a Samsung 65-inch QLED TV for $600. It was on sale. It was insane. So prices are dropping on this. Just when I was at CES a few weeks ago, I mean, they're showing all the 8K TVs right now. And you do not need 8K because there's no programming in 8K. So there's no need to run out and go get it now, because by the time 8K is viable, let's just say 5 years from now, now your TV's probably outdated from whatever the new technology is. So I wouldn't do that. If you're bougie and you want to throw a lot of money at the situation, yeah, go out and go get an OLED TV or something like that. I know my my LED TV, my Sony looks great to me. I'm getting old, so I don't need all that. It works and I'm fine. It does Dolby Vision and all that. So I'm happy with what I currently have. But yeah, if you're in the market for shopping for a TV, like I'll tell you this right now. If you're looking to save some money and get something that's going to look great, look at TCL. TCL is a bargain brand TV manufacturer. You're going to get a great set, 65 inch, maybe even higher, whatever, under $1,000. And it's going to look great, you know, unless you're just a high-end enthusiast and you have to have the latest, greatest, best, absolute stuff. Look at something like TCL. Look at something like Vizio. Then obviously you get into the Sonys and the Samsungs of the world, and you're going to pay for that. LGs of the world, you're going to spend more coin. But yeah, they're quality sets, and are going to have some more of the bells and whistles. But like I said, at a minimum, something that can do 4K, something that has HDMI 2.0, something that does at least 60 hertz, so you have 60 frames per second at 4K. If you don't care about 4K, you're doing something at 1080p and you want 120 hertz, look to see if it does that. And like I said, the HDR, at a minimum, get HDR 10. If it does Dolby Vision, that's great too. So there you go.
There you go. And Paris broke it down. And hopefully, if you have a Twitter account, make sure to follow Fat Kid Deals. They always posting like crazy prices, like and sales of everything, not only with TV and gaming, but everything. I think what sneakers I seen they posted too, right? All kinds of stuff.
Oh, so. All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Make sure to follow, man.
Yeah, I got a Sony Bravia. God, I'm trying to remember now. I can't remember the exact model number. I'd have to run out and go get it. Might be the 900F. I think I have the Bravia 900F. I think that's what it is. Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for listening to episode 1002. Make sure to head over to gamertagradio.com and listen to our past episodes. Remember, if you listen to us through any other device, make sure to share it, post a review, follow us, subscribe, all that. And let people know, man, just search for Gamertag Radio. You'll find us and tell them, hey, subscribe, man, follow them, man. Pretty cool content, man. So this week, I'm planning to travel for the first time to Tulsa, Oklahoma for the first time there. I've never been there, man. It's going to be very interesting. So I can't talk about just yet why I'm going over there, but, hopefully I can over the weekend or something. So. And that's about it for me. And then after that, 2 weeks from after that, I'm going to Orlando. I'm going to be speaking at two conferences, the same day or so. One is Cinema Vos, and the other one is Sports PodCon, and that's going to take place during PodFest. So anybody in Orlando, I'm going to be there from March 5th through the 7th. So, hit me up. Hopefully we could meet up over there, or maybe you could also attend the event, man. So for more information, just hit me up, Danny@gamertagradio.com, and I'll give you the scoop about that stuff, man. So anything else, Paris, from your end?
Yes, I'll just say that keep your eyes on IGN this week.
Okay. Is there a reason why we should be checking out IGN? IGN.com?
Yeah, you might see a familiar face there. That's all I'll say.
Okay. There you go. Stay tuned. And that's it. Until next time, we're out. We're going to release a brand new episode this Thursday. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.